As I stumbled across the field, a sense of hopelessness assailed me. Above, the ragged clouds scurried across the face of the moon, but down here I could see nothing. And it was so cold. The recent frosts had turned the ground to iron, and the crisp grass cowered under the piercing wind. I had just decided that there was no way of finding an animal in this black wasteland when Harold piped up.
"She's over here!"
And sure enough, when I groped my way towards the sound of his voice, he was standing by an unhappy-looking ewe. I don't know what instinct had brought him to her, but there she was. And she was obviously in trouble. Her head hung down miserably. And when I put my hand on her fleece, she took only a few faltering steps, instead of galloping off as a healthy sheep would. Beside her, a tiny lamb huddled close to her flank. I lifted her tail and took her temperature. It was normal. There were no signs of the usual post-lambing ailments. No staggerings to indicate a deficiency, no discharge or accelerated respiration. But there was something very far wrong. I looked again at the lamb. He was an unusually early arrival in this high country, and it seemed unfair to bring the little creature into the inhospitable world of a Yorkshire marge. And he was so small. Yes, it was beginning to filter through to me. He was too damn small for a single lamb.
"Bring me that bucket, Mr. Ingledew,"
I cried. I could hardly wait to see if I was right. But as I balanced the receptacle on the grass, the full horror of the situation smote me. I was going to have to strip off. They don't give vets medals for bravery, but as I pulled off my overcoat and jacket and stood shivering in my shirt sleeves on that black hillside, I felt I deserved one.
"Hold her head,"
I gasped, and soaked my arm quickly. By the light of the torch, I felt my way into the vagina, and I didn't have to go very far before I found what I expected. A woolly little skull. It was bent downwards with the nose under the pelvis and the legs were back.
"There's another lamb in here," I said. "It's laid wrong, or it would have been born with its mate this afternoon."
Even as I spoke, my fingers had righted the presentation, and I drew the little creature gently out and deposited him on the grass. I hadn't expected him to be alive after his delayed entry, but as he made contact with the cold ground, his limbs gave a convulsive twitch, and almost immediately I felt his ribs heaving under my hand. For a moment I forgot the knife-like wind in the thrill which I always found in new life, the thrill that was always fresh, always warm. The ewe, too, seemed stimulated because in the darkness I felt her nose pushing interestedly at the new arrival. But my pleasant ruminations were cut short by a scuffling from behind me and some muffled words.
"Bugger it,"
mumbled Harold.
"What's the matter?"
"I've kicked bucket over."
"Oh, no, is the water all gone?"
"Aye, nowt left."
Well, this was great. My arm was smeared with mucus after being inside the ewe. I couldn't possibly put my jacket on without a wash. Harold's voice issued again from the darkness.
"There's some water out at building."
"Oh, good. We've got to get this ewe and the lambs over there anyway." I threw my clothes over my shoulder, tucked a lamb under each arm, and began to blunder over the tussocks of grass to where I thought the barn lay. The ewe, clearly feeling better without her uncomfortable burden, trotted behind me. It was Harold again who had to give me directions.
"Over here!"
he shouted. When I reached the barn, I cowered thankfully behind the massive stones. It was no night for a stroll in shirt sleeves. Shaking uncontrollably, I peered at the old man. I could just see his form in the last faint radiance of the torch, and I wasn't quite sure what he was doing. He had lifted a stone from the pasture and was bashing something with it. Then I realized he was bending over the water trough, breaking the ice. When he had finished, he plunged the bucket into the trough and handed it to me.
"There's your water,"
he said triumphantly. I thought I had reached the ultimate in frigidity. But when I plunged my hands into the black liquid with its floating icebergs, I changed my mind. The torch had finally expired and I lost the soap very quickly. When I found I was trying to work up a lather with one of the pieces of ice, I gave it up and dried my arms. Somewhere nearby I could hear Harold humming under his breath, as comfortable as if he was by his own fireside. The vast amount of alcohol surging through his bloodstream must have made him impervious to the cold. We pushed the ewe and the lambs into the barn, which was piled high with hay, and before leaving I struck a match and looked at the little sheep and her new family settled comfortably among the fragrant clover. They would be safe and warm in there till morning. My journey back to the village was less hazardous because the bucket on Harold's knee was empty. I dropped him outside his house, then I had to drive to the bottom of the village to turn. As I came back past the house again, the sound forced its way into the car.
If you were the only girl in the world, and I were the only boy...
I stopped, wound the window down, and listened in wonder. It was incredible how the noise reverberated round the quiet street. And if it went on till 4 o'clock in the morning, as the neighbours said, then they had my sympathy.
Nothing else would matter in the world today.
It struck me suddenly that I could soon get tired of Harold singing. His volume was impressive, but for all that, he would never be in great demand at Covent Garden. He constantly wavered off key, and there was a grating quality in his top notes which set my teeth on edge.
We could go on loving in the same old way.
Hurriedly I wound the window up and drove off. As the heaterless car picked its way between the endless fitting pattern of walls, I crouched in frozen immobility behind the wheel. I had now reached the state of total numbness, and I can't remember much about my return to the yard at Scaledale House, nor my automatic actions of putting away the car, swinging shut the creaking doors of what had once been the old coach house, and trailing slowly down the long garden. But a realization of my blessings began to return when I slid into bed, and Helen, instead of shrinking away from me as it would have been natural to do, deliberately draped her feet and legs over the human ice block that was her husband. The bliss was unbelievable. It was worth getting out just to come back to this. I glanced at the luminous dial of the alarm clock. It was 3 o'clock, and as the warmth flowed over me and I drifted away, my mind went back to the ewe and lamb snug in their scented barn. They would be asleep now. I would soon be asleep. Everybody would be asleep. Except, that is, Harold Ingledew's neighbours. They still had an hour to go.